The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
The moment has arrived. Ireland's made history by putting the issue of marriage equality to a popular vote, and we're about to find out if it's passed.
It's such a big day and it's such an important issue. So hopefully we'll have the whole country behind us.
Well, I want to tell you folks, if you're just getting out of the scratchers, 9:41 on Saturday morning, Ivan says the yes are going to win by a landslide.
Bundoran has voted yes, Ballyshannon has voted yes, Carrick on Shore has voted yes, North Wicklow, South Wicklow, North Wexford, rural North Wexford, all have voted yes.
Majority of votes in favour of the proposal, 467,307.
Ireland is the first country in the world that has allowed its citizens to make a popular vote on this issue, and they have come up trumps.
I would have been thrilled if I had grown up in a country that already had it, but I'll take it at 46 years old. I'll take it now.
I keep calling it gay Italian 90s.
So this coming week marks 10 years after that vote, the marriage equality referendum. Former Taoiseach Joan Burton is with us. And as that audio was playing, Joan, you made a comment, which was, that was a very pleasant day. I think, oddly, that was sort of the characteristic feel. It was very pleasant. Sun was shining. There was joy and happiness around. Significant.
Yeah, and I think what was there was that Ireland, in a certain sense, had moved on and moved forward. I mean, anyone who was educated in the Irish education system would have been aware that there was a very strong system of censorship in Ireland, right from, if you like, the foundation of the state. And that was particularly grim, I think, in times like the 1930s. But it still existed for a very, very long time. So while, if you like, gay people obviously did not have legal rights to exercise their particular preferences, the whole thing was that Ireland was really coming into a better age of being much more generous to people, whoever they were, and of seeking to be a much more inclusive society. And that was very, very positive. Now, we had at that stage as well elected Mary Robinson to be president. That was a very marked change. And again, she was somebody who, as a lawyer, was very interested in human rights at all appropriate levels. There was also a strong women's rights movement, obviously, as well. So, it was very good. And my memory of the day is that it was a very happy day for an awful lot of people who felt that we're now recognised, we're fully part of Ireland. It's not that they were never Irish or anything like that. We're fully part of Ireland, and we are free to both talk about, our lives, and we're also free now, to have marriage equality.
Were there particular moments looking from within the political system that you saw as catalysts, Rubicons, significant in that shift in thinking?
Yes, and I think a lot of it was, went particularly with the era of Mary Robinson, because as a lawyer, she was very au fait with the detail, and indeed had represented people, as had most of the lawyers who were politicians at the time. I mean, if you look at, say, somebody like Mary McAleese as well, when she became president, she was extremely open to meeting everybody in Irish society. And that characterised both of the women presidents. So my memory of it, including the time, in Dublin Castle, when there was an extremely happy crowd, is how I would describe it. And people were wrapped in gay flags. They were wrapped in colours, the gay colours, everything like that. And it really had a kind of feeling of something of a party about it.
Were you surprised at how fast the shift was? Because obviously for those waiting for it to happen, it was an age. But in societal terms, to go from decriminalisation to equal marriage, That was a pretty rapid transition from a hyper-conservative country that had preceded it.
Well, as I say, there were a number of changes which drove it, certainly in the Labour Party. I think the other thing that happened as well is a lot of gay people, gay couples, men and women, decided to become politically involved and politically connected. So they talked to the politicians, they met the politicians, they talked in their local newspapers, in the national newspapers. We obviously had people like Catherine Sabone and Anne-Louise Gilligan who were, leading. And we had David Norris. And David Norris had really done a tremendous amount of work and talked, as David could talk, in the Seanad on it. And all of that opened the whole thing out. And I think as well, I do recall being down around Ross Cray at one stage, and I was canvassing. I was the leader of the Labour Party at the time, and I was canvassing. And this woman came up to me to talk to me, and she said, like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I want to help my son. I want to look after my son. Because she said, and a bit of a, she was very emotional about it. My son is gay. And I don't know how long she may have known it or guessed it privately, but I think he had come out. And I said, look, all I can say is I'm out here canvassing. I'm talking to you. I'm talking to other people. You just talk to everybody in your family and your friends network and just say, do you know this referendum is on? X is my son is gay and so on, or your nephew is gay or your grandson is gay. And so, it was very clear that, for instance, grannies and granddads were going out to vote yes. And that all just added to the sense of a communal decision. So in the end, it passed about 61%, but it was kind of 60 something, 30 something. So it there were still a lot of people who had were very negative about it and had a lot of reservations about it.
Oh, but still, a 2/3 majority is very significant.
It was fantastic.
And was that important? Because if it had been a narrow thing, it might have, you would have the same legislative end result, but a different statement about the country.
Yeah, well, constitutionally, a narrow result, a win is a win in terms of referenda. But you're dead right, because it meant that those people who were maybe perhaps publicly a bit silent about it, but privately perhaps in favour, and they had gone out and voted, I think when people went home, they were delighted to say, well, we voted yes. And when you looked at the figures, that was likely because the margins were very, very strong.
Did you expect that to be the case, or did you think, because it was, if I recall correctly, it was one of those elections or one of those referendums where the analysis in advance talked a lot about things like that shy Tory factor. What would people do in the privacy of the ballot box versus what they say when they're at?
And in many ways, what people were talking there about was a kind of an older generation. I think it was very visible that, let's say, younger people who were, from 18 to say in their early middle 30s, that they were very solidly pro. That wasn't to say that there wasn't a lot of young people who had reservations and negativity about it. But they then passed that. And it used to be said, when you were talking to people canvassing who are activists for the campaign, as a politician, what I said to them is just make sure you talk to all your family and particularly talk to the older people in the family so that they understand how important it is to you. And I think that's what was said to them by lots of different parties and people. And certainly in the Labour Party, where there had been, going back to, in particular, to the time of Dr. Noel Brown, who fell in and fell out with all the different parties that he was involved in. But I knew him shortly after I joined the Labour Party in my 20s, and he was very succinct on the proper, if you like, the property of the public to have rights to live their life and to live it in a construct of laws that was reasonable and that was publicly orientated to have, if you like, a good society.
It's still, it must have been a very significant personal shift for some in that older demographic, because to go from a position where A, it was criminal, B, if you faced excommunication or being read from the altar, it was societally utterly unacceptable for many. And there would be people, I assume, in that cohort who made a personal decision and said, no, what I have been brought up with, I now reject and no longer believe. That's a hard shift to make.
Yeah, I think that did happen. And I think, for instance, there were, although the church technically was heavily opposed to it, at a local level, and while, you know, you didn't have many priests really coming out or other religious coming out directly on it, at a local level, it was very clear, you know, because, for instance, maybe being at some event at a local church, you know, meeting local priests, it was very clear that, say, a significant number of them, not necessarily a majority, but a significant number were giving it a lot of thought. And my guess would be that quite a number of them, you know, probably voted positively. So I think in the end, there was a big thing between ages, and it was older people who were fearful and more likely to be negative on it. But they weren't negative towards the young people who were gay in a personal way. They were just constitutionally more worried about it. That's what came across to me, because I did go and canvass around the country and talk to people in different areas. And I had done that as well at the time of the divorce referendum. So, you know, I think when there's big issues like that, people do like to talk to public representatives, hear their views, chew on their own views and make a decision.
You talked about it being representative of a shift towards a generally more inclusive Ireland than the one that had preceded it. If you look now at what's happening, particularly what's happening in the States and beginning to migrate across bits of Europe, in terms of openness towards people who are different to you, have you worries that we may be entering a retrograde period in that respect?
Well, I think, you know, there is a concern that, particularly, as you say, in the States, there's a very conscious new right who are, you know, they're flexing their muscles and they're talking. And the other thing as well is that, you know, social media can be a very difficult place and a very, if you like, dangerous place in terms of the stories that are put out. So there isn't, there's no doubt that there's a negativity there. But, you know, overall, in terms of the United States, you'd probably need to take it state by state. There are states that are, you know, for instance, you wouldn't expect either New York or California to really change, but there would be states which are quite conservative. However, I really think in many ways this is a family and a friend issue, and people now know people who have not been afraid to say, well, actually, you know, I'm your nephew, but I'm gay or whatever. And people have absorbed that. And even in the States, what I do think, though, that is social media can be, you know, very, very negative on campaigning. Now, social media is full of people who are very pro, you know, marriage equality and pro things like the referendum. But there's also sets of people who are very negative about it.
Joan, thank you very much for coming in. That is Joan Burton, former Taoiseach then, of course, discussing the 10-year anniversary. And there's going to be more returns and more reminiscences from various different people involved in the campaigns and impacted by the vote and impacted by the process of getting the vote across the line. That'll be across News Talk in the coming days. Just a reminder, the Irish National Stud and Gardens, one of the only working stud farms in the world open to the public, has given us lovely competition. They're located in the heart of Kildare, just off the M7 at Junction 13, open 7 days a week. Perfect for a family day out. You can see stallions, mares, newborn foals, and for the little ones, there's a magical fairy trail and fairy village. For full details, you can see irishnationalstud.ie. The competition they've given us, a private tour of the Irish National Stud and Gardens, plus a two-night stay at the luxurious Killeshea House Hotel with breakfast on both mornings and dinner on an evening of your choice. Prizes for two adults sharing, and you can text the word Kildare and your name to us now on 53106. That is 53106. Text say Anton Unforgettable. forgettable day. I walked around the city that evening, soaking it all up. What an atmosphere. Back after this break with the man responsible, with, of course, David Attenborough, for that stunning Netflix documentary on our oceans.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.